Tomas, Tomas, we are back, my friend. You know what that means? Time for a little bit more Tasty Live with Confirm and Send. But before we do, let's take a quick look at the market. Even the S&Ps were up on Sunday morning. They continue to rally. They're up around 21 handles, 21 and a quarter, trading at or near their highs. NASDAQ up 58, about 15 off of their highs. Russell up 16, and the Dow up 157. They're all up around the same percentage. Maybe the Russell is slightly higher on a percentage basis. Volatility in 15 cents. If you were looking on Friday, we went under 15 on volatility, down to 14.30 and change, where we sit right now at 14.40, new lows or near new lows in volatility. Bonds, on the other hand, took a nice little run to the upside. They had some two-side action on Friday. They won 16.13, up around 13 ticks. Bitcoin took some action to the upside, although it has sold off a little bit this morning by about 500 bucks. The last time I quoted it, it was over 64,000. It's under 64,000 now at 63,500 and change. Oil traded over 79. It's 78.75 right now. It's at a dollar range, relatively tight range. You can see over the last week or so, it's been weak in oil. Ivy rank of 27, creeping up, but still relatively low. Gold up $25. Also was taking a little bit of a breather the last couple of days, catching itself a bit now, up a little over 1%. Silver's up actually more than that, almost 3%. 81 cents move in silver is a very big move in that product. Same thing with nat gas, a 6 cents move in there, over 220, just in time for the summer pool heating season. 220 and change here. Corn, wheat, and soybeans all down ever so slightly. That's all I got, Thomas.
These are emails that came into us over the weekend. Lots and lots of them, as always. I know it's not typical of Tasty Traders to be directional, but when we are, what is the best way to do that? Buy or sell futures, short and at-the-money credit spread, or is there another way altogether?
I mean, I don't know what you mean by best. I think the most leverage you can get for a bang for your buck would be buy or sell futures, but that's a 50-50 shot. I prefer the option side of it. So for me, it would be, you know, some sort of option strategy with long delta. I rarely have 100 deltas on any position that I put on per contract. I'm actually closer to, you know, 30, 40 long deltas on any position that I would have that would be directional.
I mean, you'd be surprised, but as much as we talk on the network about being non-directional and delta neutral and stuff like that, most Tasty Traders are directional. It's human nature to be directional in some capacity, a little bit here, a little bit there, whatever it is. Some people are fully directional. But, I mean, you could do any of the above. Buy or sell futures? Sure. Anything that gives you long or short delta, that's, you know, it doesn't matter to us. So short and at-the-money credit spread, long at-the-money put spread, you know, short, I mean, short naked calls, long, you know, long naked puts, short naked puts, long naked calls. I mean, actually, we don't, the whole thing is, on Tasty, we try to optimize everything you do, which means we'd like you to do something that has a probabilistic edge. Like, we'd rather see you sell a call credit spread if you want to get short rather than buy a put. But, you know, you, delta's delta. Just do whatever you want to do. And we just give you kind of what we think are the optimal mechanics to do that. But any of the above sound fine to me. Anything. Let's go to the next slide. There's nothing wrong with being directional. Why do investors seem to want the Fed to lower interest rates?
Maybe because I think they perceive it as a bullish bias to the market. I think that would be the easiest way to say it.
Yeah, I mean,
and borrowing money gets cheaper, I guess.
I mean, investors seem to want the Fed to lower interest rates because if interest rates are lower, that makes, you know, on paper, that makes stocks more attractive. I always felt like if interest rates are lower, the economy is, you know, is growing slower. And so stocks, why would stocks be necessarily more attractive? I never really understood that either, but
that's the way it's been sold to the public.
That's kind of the, you know, it's when interest rates are lower, then stocks become more attractive because the difference in risk-free returns to passive returns widens out. So that's the answer. Whether or not, how much truth there is to it, I don't know. As interest rates went up, we went to record highs. So I would argue there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. Let's go to the next slide. You debunk the old saying, sell in May and go away. We have debunked that many times. What do you think about the old adage, buy the rumor, sell the news?
Yeah, you're right. Sell in May and go away, really don't. I mean, that's more of like a soundbite for somebody.
Yeah,
that's not our
soundbite. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, for our thing. But yeah, buy the rumor, sell the news. Yeah, we usually sell the news more than buy the rumor. But that's something that we kind of live by, I think. I mean, we're contrarians, so you know, we like to fade things.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree.
And it doesn't have to be direction here, like, you know, like buying meaning it's going higher and selling meaning it's going lower. It's just the news itself.
I would agree with the bat here that we are totally, I don't think we're a buy the rumor people either. I think we are sell the news people. So, yeah, I like it. I mean, sell the news, sure. That's what we've been doing forever. I don't know if we buy the rumor so much, but we definitely sell the news.
Yep.
Let's go to the next slide. That's classic contrarian stuff, by the way. In a market measure, it mentioned that volatility expands 10% of the time, contracts 20% of the time, and is in a lull state 70% of the time. That's true. But to what degree do you think the benefits of constantly being short volatility are offset by the 10% chance of getting caught in a volatility expansion? I guess what I'm asking is the 10% of the time when volatility is rising or expanding enough to offset the opportunity costs of not always being short volatility?
I mean, this would be a short answer for a very well-written question here. Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, I've based my, you know, almost 40-year career on doing just that. Yeah.
Yeah, because we, you know, the way we look at it, it's not 10 versus 20% of the time. We look at it, it's 10 versus 90% of the time, because a lull state is just, you know, it's kind of like nothing's happening. So yeah, I mean, why, I'm not really, yeah, the answer is yes. We do feel like it's worth it. If we didn't feel it was worth it, we wouldn't do everything that we do. But if volatility expands 10% of the time and contracts or stays in a lull state the other 90% of the time, why would you want to do anything but that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. That's just my thought process. So, you know, based on our research, the answer is, we'll stand by what we say. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the next slide. So I see you do a lot of repositioning on your strangles, closing and resetting new strikes within the same expiration. I do call that buy the guts, sell the wings. It's recentering. First, are you locking in profits when you do this? Second, are you repositioning to a more favorable setup? And why would you choose this strategy over rolling one side? Lastly, is your P&L better for doing this?
Well, I don't know if my P&L is better or worse for doing it or not doing all the above that you mentioned there. So I'm going to take this from the backwards and work my way up that way. But I can say that my volatility of my P&L has certainly decreased by doing all of this. And what I mean by that is just the swings in my positive and negatives have become more consistent by doing all the above. And why do we do most of it? Well, most of it we do for a lot of reason. Being mechanical just allows you, you know, never to have any dividend risk. It never allows you to be long or short stock if you don't want to be, like you don't get exercised or assigned. Rolling both sides as opposed to only one side allows you to maximize your buying power. If you only roll one side, you'll be using a lot more buying power. So all of the above is just the totality of some of the mechanics that we use to put ourselves in a highest probability of success.
The first question here is, are you locking in profits when you do this? And the answer is sometimes yes.
I was going to say sometimes.
Sometimes for sure, yes. Sometimes no, but we don't really know. Like we don't follow it that closely. Like we recenter because we feel like we should, not because it's a profit or a loss. Second, are you repositioning to a more favorable setup? 100%. That's why we're doing it. And why would you choose this strategy over rolling one side? And the answer is your first choice would always be to roll one side. But when you get too close to the at-the-money strike, that's when we do this. So the answer is why we choose this strategy: to widen out the strikes again, widen out, recenter. And lastly, is your overall P&L better doing this? And the answer is, I don't know. Based on our research, our research suggests that using the SPY, it is marginally better. Is it a dramatic difference? I don't know. But like Tony said, by recentering and reducing our delta, we are definitely reducing our P&L volatility, our position volatility, our P&L volatility. So our volatility is lower. I think our P&L is better. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. But we can't prove that the P&L is dramatically better. We can prove that it does reduce your volatility. Let's go to the last slide.
Yep.
So I have an account where I only sell ES puts that are far out of the money. If my account is $200,000, how many puts do you think I can sell at a time?
I'm okay. I only sell ES puts that are far out of the money. In my account is 200. How many puts do you think I can sell at a time? Puts in ES, he's talking?
Yeah, ES. That's all he does. Out of the money ES puts.
Well, I'd have to first take a look at what an ES put does. So let's do that. How much buying power that takes in a regular margin account. Let's see, one put Sazonov at around the 45 day time frame.
I'd do the June, like, let's say 4800s, the 10 deltas.
Oh, you're going far out.
Well, he says that are far out of the money.
I know. Yeah, I know. You're looking at around $6,000. So four to eight.
So I forgot exactly the answer I gave to this person, but what I'd like to say about this is that, what'd you say? So if each put requires $6,000 selling out of the money.
Approximately, I'm just rounding.
Okay. If your account is 200,000, you're not gonna wanna put much more, I don't think you're gonna wanna put much more than 20 or 25% of the account would be absolute maximum into this strategy, just because it's too one-dimensional, nothing else. So you're talking, let's say, max of 50 grand. So just like Tony said, if it's 6,000 per put, you know, it'd be somewhere for me, you know, the max would be eight, the min would be probably 3 to 4. And just because it's a one-dimensional single strategy, and that's where I would be, somewhere between, you know, probably 3 and 4 and a max of 8. And the only time I would get anywhere close to that max, you know, using up the 50,000, I mean, I'd rather see you less than 25% of the account in this case, maybe 15% of the account, but it's up to you. And so, I don't know, 2, 3,
I mean,
four.
It's the only thing they do. So I would probably be on the higher side. I mean,
I get it. I mean, the 10 delta puts 45 days from now, those are far out of the money, are trading for $14. That's $700 you're taking in a premium. $700,
right, 50 cents a point.
Right. $700 times, let's just say, times four, let's just call it $3,000. So you're taking in $3,000 over a 45 day period. You're hoping to collect, let's just say you can keep half of that at 21 days. You're talking about $1,500. You know, that's
$3,500. $7,000 in premium.
It's only $3,000 a premium, $1,500 times, let's call it $22,000. I mean, on a $200,000, that's a target. That's a 90% probability of making about, you know, 10% on your money. That's probably a decent risk reward for a 90% probability of profit on a $200,000 account. Yeah. I mean, that's probably where I'd be, because it's one dimensional. You want to get bigger than that, go ahead. Like I said, you could do 8, you could do double that, go for 20%. Mm-hmm. You can do it. Mm-hmm. It's up to you. I would scale up when IVR is high. I would scale down when IVR is low.
Very good, very good. I'll take a quick 90-second break and come back. We got more Tasty Live after this with an option jive. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.